Hello and welcome to Full Access Hoops Basketball Podcast. Be sure to head to basketball.com for the greatest NBA content out there. With me today on the show, I have Zach Noble of the Four Seasons Podcast. Zach, how's it going?
Doing well. I think it's my off day from my full-time job, but it hasn't been an off day to say the least.
Yeah, and that's something that's funny with how I work. I work a lot of jobs myself. My off days are still just more of like a hobby invested work, you know?
Right.
It's there's no days off. I know you know how it goes. The Four Seasons Podcast, definitely check them out. They have some amazing guests on all the time. A really fun podcast.
Appreciate that, man. Oh, you work as hard as anybody out there.
There, you know how the grind goes. So now, today we're talking about the Minnesota Timberwolves. You know, a team that's got some nice young pieces, more in particular, Karl Anthony Towns. Last season was kind of a mess. Obviously, the Jimmy Butler saga started the year off rocky. I mean, it was great for content. It was great for the jokes and everything else that came with it. But I'm interested to know, Zach, how you, as a fan of the Timberwolves, how did last season go for you between the Jimmy Butler saga and then just the team, you know, outside of Karl Anthony Towns just not being very good?
Man, it was a cluster madness, whatever you want to call it, to say the least. I feel like there was like seven seasons within one season between the whole Butler saga. It just feels like it was years ago that this Jimmy Butler was on our team. And then everything that's changed, we were jacked up about Robert Covington coming in for a little bit, him and Dario. Robert playing really well, being one of the best defensive players in the league for a little bit there. And then him going down, and then we had to figure things out, and Jeff Teague declining a lot, and Derrick Rose going for 50 and looking really, really good there for a while, and Andrew Wiggins paying him a shitload of money before the year and declining like crazy. Just there's so many storylines, and it definitely keeps you on your feet and figuring out what's to come or what's happening. And it could be worse, you know. I definitely could be a Charlotte Hornets. I could be the Phoenix Suns. There could be a lot worse situations. We still have a top 20 player in Towns at a minimum. And I think he's got the potential to be a top three guy in this league. So I loved what we did from a front office standpoint and a coaching perspective. I'm okay with. So I think we're definitely doing some decent things. Not the best off season, but we'll get into it here.
I actually want to touch on Flip Saunders first.
Ryan
Saunders. Sorry,
Flip Saunders. Okay. You're gonna touch my heart there for a second.
So, how have you felt on Ryan Saunders as the guy leading this Minnesota Timberwolves team going forward after Tom Thibodeau was removed last season?
You know, it's a really touchy subject for me because with Karl Anthony Towns, with a talent like this, I mean, the guy doesn't come along too often where I'm going to say he's got top three talent in the league or he's got that type of potential at least. So every single move is super important because these players can leave or demand a trade immediately or whenever they feel like it. So you got to make sure it's a good situation. And then the whole saga with Jimmy Butler, it really made Towns and Wiggins out to be very soft. I don't really care much about Wiggins' feelings, but Towns, I mean, I treat him like my firstborn child, you know? So with that said, I mean, Ryan Saunders, my expectations for him were really, really high. Like when he came in, I expected we were at a point where we're still in the playoff hunt. I think we were honestly somewhere between 7 and 10. We're still there, and I still think we had the talent to make the playoffs, and we were winning when Covington Sarge came in there and still in the hunt. And then when Covington went down, my expectations got a little more realistic, and I wanted to be at 40 wins. And honestly, he won some good games, but lost more than I wanted to. But overall, I was really happy the relationships he built with players, especially Towns and Wiggins. I feel like he's related to him on a much higher level than any coach really they've had besides Flip and Tibbs going through that. I mean, he doesn't relate to players at all. So it's just night and day there. And I think that's a really important thing. So I was okay with the job he did last year. I still wish we would have done a lot more research into coaches and interviewed a lot more candidates than we did. They did the due diligence on our front office search. I was really proud of and happy about. But the head coaching thing, even if it was like 3 months and then we ended on Ryan Saunders, I would have been fine. I'm okay with Ryan Saunders. It's just the fact that we didn't put that much effort into looking elsewhere.
Right. No, that's how I felt as well. Like you said, though, it's definitely a plus how the players have taken to Ryan Saunders. I remember him getting his first win, and the team, you know, they were just as happy as he was, which is obviously really cool and fun to see. Now, talking about some of the additions the Timberwolves have made, nothing really splashy. You know, bringing in Shabazz Napier, they drafted Jared Culver, they have Jake Lehman coming in, Noah Vonleh. Any of these guys stick out? Any guys you're excited about them signing?
Honestly, the most important addition to our team is the health of Robert Covington. I truly think he's going to be our second best player, and he's an all defensive guy the last full year he played. So not last year, the year before with the Sixers. And he's a guy I think that can come out and average 20 this year. I truly believe that he could be up for maybe most improved player type of thing. But I mean, I really like bringing the toughness. Okay. We didn't have much money to work with. I thought it was a huge loss in Rose. I really wanted to bring Derrick Rose back as a spark plug, but I think his loss is going to be an addition for other players because he took a lot away from Wiggins and Teague and just other guys that were doing decent before he got there. But Jake Lehman, Jordan Bell, Shabazz Napier, Noah Vonleh, those guys are tough. They're fighters. I mean, they're bringing grit to the team, and that's something the team needs more than anything. So I think they're bringing some good things. And Naz Reid, like, he's a rookie that went under the radar, had a really good summer league. So I think there's a lot of toughness on this team. And then most importantly, we went out and made a splash in the draft, which is something we never do. Like, we don't take too many big risks. And we went out and got Jared Culver at the 6. I mean, I know we really wanted Darius Garland, which I would have been much happier about, to be honest. I had Garland higher on my board, but also the fact that we need a point guard and more shooting on our team. But I'm really high on Jared Culver. I'm really excited about that. I love the trade, the 10 pick or the 11 pick and Saric for Culver. I think that was excellent. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have three for sure starting players for our future. And hopefully Wiggins turns into a guy a little bit I can believe in, but the rest is to be determined.
So I think we should just talk about Wiggins now.
It over with.
Yeah. The elephant in the room is Andrew Wiggins at this point. Now, I was a pretty big Andrew Wiggins fan coming out of college. Obviously, even at Kansas, we saw this type of turbulent player, right? He would have the explosive nights and then the lackluster nights. And really, nothing has changed so far in the NBA. He has these good stretches. I mean, if it's against OKC, forget about it. OKC Andrew Wiggins is hoodie mellow status at this point. he's phenomenal. But outside of that, you know, last year averaging 18 points per game on shooting splits of 41, 33. And then the alarming part is the 69 from free throw. What are your thoughts on Wiggins? Was it just fit last year? Was it just, there was a, you know, the head coaching change, the Jimmy Butler situation, was it just a weird season or is he just really regressing?
Yeah, man. So, you nailed it on the head. Free throw is super important. That's an interesting decline right there and says it all, but, he's been in the league 5 years now. Like, fit shouldn't be an option. If we're paying you as much as we are, you should, anybody that you're paying this much, you should never have to worry about fit. It should just be talent over fit in that case. But we got to just throw the money aside and take it for what it is right now. But honestly, to start, the fit, I mean, the biggest thing, Jimmy Butler came in and Derrick Rose came in, and they were the primary. Wiggins went from being the number one, number two guy with Towns there. He was number one before Towns got there, and he was showing improvement his first 3 years and shooting decent league averages efficiency wise. And then he was averaging 23.6 points, basically 24 points per game. Like, Jamal Murray and Devin Booker, those type of guys, great stats on bad teams, you know? Like, people thought he was ascending and worth this contract, but Rose and Butler come in and they put Wiggins in the corner, and Wiggins even said it last year. He came out and said, and this is what scares me more than anything, he told a reporter he thinks he lost his mojo. And when anybody, a player that young, admits to something like that, it scares the living hell out of you.
Yeah, it's definitely worrisome for a 22-year-old to say
right.
Mojo, because this is when you're supposed to be like finding your mojo, not losing it.
You got it. But like, at least he has self-awareness. He knows that he's declined and sucks a little bit right now. So those guys are both gone that put him in the corner. So the excuses should be out the door. This is the last year anybody who actually believes in Wiggins, I think, has a chance to believe in him. I mean, the dude hasn't been a dud for his career, like as some people may seem. I mean, he's shown plenty of glimpses. Yes, OKC, OKC, and OKC. But he's had 740-point games, and I'm sure at least three of those came against OKC. But a big thing for me is he lost his aggression, his mojo, and he dunked 75-plus times every year of his career, and then last year he only dunked 39 times.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was a super interesting stat I recently found out, and it's insane. And he just has never improved on defense, and that comes with the grit and the aggressiveness as well. So it definitely worries me. I think he's got a great shot with Ryan. He's been bonding hard with him. He is actually posting workout videos, so he's proving he's working out. But, like, contrary to belief, many people say he never has worked hard, but, like, I think he works. I just don't know the hard part. There's two things. Like, in his workouts, right. I don't know how hard he's
going. Is he going through the motions, or
you got
dedicated
it.
To the grind and the process?
Absolutely. And it's like his whole career, like, he was drafted number one after a college year that wasn't, like, an outstanding freshman year in college. And then he gets Rookie of the Year after an okay Rookie of the Year stint. It was because he's in a terrible draft class, really. So he's kind of just had this belief probably in his mind that he's going to be just fine and everything's working out for him. And hopefully he's getting hit with a ton of Brinks trucks and bricks of money right now and realizes it's going to run out sooner than later.
So I'll ask you this now. How likely do you think it is that Wiggins gets traded to a degree? Obviously, there was rumbling this past offseason. I know his value, as we mentioned, isn't at an all-time high. Do you think it's possible that we see Andrew Wiggins moved in the next year or two?
You know, there were rumblings, and I really think we should have capitalized on them, and that's for anything minuscule. Like, I truly think there's teams out there, there's coaches out there, there's very few, probably 5 to 7, that can get more potential out of Wiggins. I don't necessarily think Ryan Saunders is one of them. But I mean, as soon as somebody makes an offer, I think you just have to accept it at this point. But I just feel like these guys don't want to lose value this quickly, and they still think he's young enough, being he's only 24. Yada, yada, yada. But, I think you should just trade him for anything if you can. I do think we have pieces, though, and I think he can be an asset for at least, it's not going to be much longer. I'm telling you that. As soon as he steps on the floor next year, and if his game keeps depreciating, it's going to be ugly for sure. And we're going to be eating that contract, and Towns isn't going to be happy. And then it's just a domino effect. I mean, tell me, do you believe in him at all? Do you think there's teams that should trade for him or take a flyer on him?
You know, when the OKC rumors were going, I thought about OKC taking a flyer just to get some young talent in OKC. Mm-hmm. So you're not losing out on everything with, you know, Paul George and Russell Westbrook. But I mean, I think there's like the Charlotte Hornets. I thought that made a lot of sense to a degree, because if you're the Hornets, I mean, what else do you have at this point? So if you get a young guy like Wiggins who's locked up, at least you know you have some sort of young asset going forward. But I just can't imagine there being too many destinations. Those are the first two that always come to mind, though, for me.
Man, I'm with you. Good mind there. So, yeah, I truly believe with all those picks OKC has, I mean, why not? I mean, the guy's shown his best flashes against your team, if you could dump Chris Paul for Andrew Wiggins, and most Minnesota fans don't even want to do that yet, but I would in a heartbeat. I've always been a big Chris Paul guy, though, and mostly they just believe that Chris Paul is going to come in and hurt Carl's feelings,
yeah,
which is
hilarious.
It drives me nuts. I'm like, you really? You think Towns is that soft that can't play with a Hall of Famer?
I mean, obviously, those scenarios always go one of two ways. They either clash, but in that scenario, I think the fact that Chris Paul will be utilizing Karl-Anthony Towns to the highest degree,
yes,
in that offense, that the relationship is going to be good because it's going to be clear cut that Towns is the best player and Chris,
yes,
Paul is going to be playing pure facilitator mode. And who,
correct,
knows, that kind of toughness and grit, like, yeah, it doesn't work for everybody, but Chris Paul is a dog at the end of the day. And somebody's going to lash onto that. And if you're winning, they're going to like each other. And I'm a big fan of Chris Paul going to Minnesota in some scenario.
Right, and for instance, when you bring up Charlotte, like, they literally have right now the worst young core in the league, and one of the guys that's going to be playing a lot of minutes this year, at least he better, who I think should have been playing a lot more before, who I believe in a lot, is Malik Monk. And if you don't believe in him, go trade him for Wiggins. I mean, why you're overpaying for Terry Rozier? Why not just, I don't know. They're
right.
Those two teams that, like, you're not doing much, really. So why don't you just go take a huge risk on a guy who's proven he can actually score 20-plus points in a season?
Pressure.
I
mean,
right.
Not pressure in Minnesota. There's definitely no pressure in Charlotte. I mean,
correct.
The expectations are so low.
Right. In Minnesota, I mean, being we do have a star, like, there's so much pressure.
Now, I want to talk about Towns for a quick second. Obviously, Towns, the second half of last season, more so after he was in, like, the car accident, which he even said, like, you know, he got lucky. But he was an absolute animal when he realized that, you know, how close he was to possibly losing his life. I mean, he went on an absolute tear. I know the Pacers caught the brunt of it in one of our matchups. I think he went off for, like, 35-15 against Miles Turner. How good can Towns get this year? Obviously, we've seen the flourishes of Towns. A dynamic offensive scorer, can rebound. The defense is probably the weaker part of his game, but it's still a subpar to above average rim protector. What do you see coming out of Towns this upcoming year?
Thank you for saying that. Subpar to whatever rim protector. I'll take that. No doubt. And I think his defense is underrated. Like, he can do things from time to time. I mean, average near two blocks. And he gets one-on-one. I mean, he's not a bad help defender. I mean, it's one-on-one defense is struggling. I mean, and it got better last year. I truly believe it got better and improved throughout the season. But what I see in Towns, it's all going to depend on how much he can make his teammates around him better and become more of a playmaker. Kind of like Nikola Jokic. I mean, of course, you're never going to be as good as the best passing big man of all time, in my opinion. But, I mean, let's get a little closer if you're going to be one of our primary playmakers and one of the leaders of the team, or else be okay with other people taking control more. I would love to see him average close to 5 assists. I mean, at least maybe get up to 6, especially if you're going to have the usage you want and can handle. But we'll see. I think that's the biggest thing for me. Everything else he has, I think defense, Ryan's going to, especially Covington being out there, I think Covington's going to get more defense out of these guys than Butler ever did. I truly believe that. It's just a great personality to have, and he's contagious. And so those are the biggest things. I mean, his passing, playmaking, and then on the defensive side, he just needs to keep getting better.
So now, expectations for the team as a whole. Obviously, Towns is going to be the driving force of this team. You're looking for Covington to stay healthy. Teague maybe have a bounce back year. Culver to make an impact early. Wiggins are hoping that he gets back on track. Where do you see the Minnesota Timberwolves falling in the Western Conference? Because as we know, the Western Conference is pretty much 12 teams deep.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's going to be competing, it feels like, for the majority of the season. Where did the Timberwolves fall?
Yeah, I think the best case scenario is the 7 seed. I really do. But, I mean, there'd have to be injuries around the league, and we'd have to play our absolute best from top to bottom, and Towns would have to be in the MVP discussion, which I personally believe it, but I think the worst case is Towns gets injured or Wiggins just keeps declining. And who knows? We at that point, we end up, depending on how early Towns gets injured, I mean, we're definitely below 30 games for sure. It's, right. Towns is our team, really. But my prediction, I think we're going to be right around 38 to 42, and that's if everybody stays healthy. The point guard situation is still drives me nuts. I'm not a Jeff Teague guy at all. I never have been. Even in his Atlanta days, I preferred Schroeder. So with that said, I mean, I really hope Jared Culver, Towns, Covington, Okogie. I'm a big Okogie guy. I hope these guys can become better playmakers and ball handlers, and we just become a more democratic offense overall, and just our passing and team efficiency just goes up.
Yeah, I have them probably right around the same win mark, somewhere between 38 and 40 wins. I think they probably missed out in the playoffs, of course, with them being under 500 in the Western Conference. But, you know, if the young guys pop off and Wiggins plays how we know Wiggins can play, if he's back to averaging 23.6 and not in, like, a selfish manner, right, and goes up to his game, this team will be competing, I think, for a playoff spot. But there are definitely a lot of variables that got to come to fruition first.
So do you believe in, like, Covington or Culver?
I mean, I'm a big fan of Covington. Even when the 76ers sucked, Covington was the one guy I was like, that guy plays defense and hits threes. He'll be good anywhere he plays.
Yes.
You know, that guy, during the early stages of the process, I was like, he's definitely going to be useful for somebody if he ever gets out of there.
Absolutely. No, he's been great his whole career for sure. And he just plays with a chip on his shoulder coming from the G League and coming from a really tiny college. Like, he's an awesome person, and his game is fits perfect in today's game, and he bombs them from way beyond the line. What do you think about, like, Jared Culver or any of our bench guys? I mean, do you think you can see improvement anywhere else?
I mean, I like Okogie.
Grasping at straws here, man.
Yeah, I mean, I like Okogie. I mean, the defense he played last year in certain stints were all over NBA Twitter. That guy can definitely defend a lot of the better guards. I mean, James Harden struggled against him last season. You know, that's on tape. Check the tape. I mean, outside of that, I like Jake Layman. He had some nice flashes with the Portland Trailblazers last year, like some nice instant offensive moments. I mean, but again, you know, even Noah Vonleh with the Knicks last year. That's a guy who's scrappy on the boards.
You got it.
So I definitely like the bench. I don't know if anyone's going to be a major offensive impact. A lot of streaky guys, you know, even Shabazz Napier, a little bit streaky, a little bit undersized. Jared Culver, I'm not a giant college guy, so I just know from what I see highlights on draft night. There's definitely potential there. I know I've seen videos of him in the gym. The jump shot looks really smooth and clean. But again, you know, how much can you make an impact your rookie season will be yet to be determined.
Right, and he's going to have an opportunity to. I'm telling you that, I think.
Yeah.
I'll be surprised if he's not averaging 25 minutes a game. I really will be.
Oh, for sure. I actually agree with you. I think he's got to be playing somewhere between 20 and 27 minutes per game would be where I expect him.
Our depth is scary.
Yeah. I mean, the fun thing about this Timberwolves team is it's really young.
Right.
I mean, this is an extremely young guy. I mean, the let's see. I'm looking at experience. You know, Jeff Teague with 10 years, Covington and Deng with 6, Wiggins with 5, and then Shabazz and Vonleh with 5, and everyone else is under 5. You know, it's a very young team, which is fun. Young head coach. That's one thing that benefits the Timberwolves is this is definitely a young squad.
Right, and they like each other. They all went to the Bahamas this year, and that's something.
Beach volleyball. That was awesome.
Damn right. No, that photo was unreal, and the video footage there. Even Ryan Saunders, he was doing events all week at the Minnesota State Fair, and then he flies down just to film that scene with them and play some volleyball.
Yeah, definitely a nice tight group, which you like to see. I think that's, I mean, chemistry, it's the thing you can't really gauge how much a team has, but you know when a team has it, and the Timberwolves have definitely shown this offseason they have it. Reminds me of the Nets before last season when all those young guys getting together in Cali and doing Cali runs.
That's what I'm talking about.
So now, obviously, the NBA is fantastic, and this July we saw numerous players change teams, a lot of player movement. That's what the NBA is. I mean, we're pretty much a full calendar year-long sport at this point. What other teams, what players and new destinations have caught your attention this offseason?
Jeez, where do I start?
Right, I know, the list can be long. The list can be long. You can give me your top three or top five.
Anybody you haven't talked about much? I mean,
you know the favorites. The favorites right. Versus Paul George and Kawhi to the Clippers. The Lakers trading for Davis.
And
Durant to Brooklyn. Those three are definitely the headliners.
Yeah, let's see here. I truly believe Miami. Like, I love their young core and the fit around Jimmy Butler. Like, I don't think he's going there to retire just yet. I really don't. Like,
I'll ask you this then off the Miami thing, because I'm interested to know your take. So obviously we've heard the Bradley Beal rumors. Do you think it's possible that we see a Bradley Beal trade to Miami this season? Because that's been the guy I've heard countless times so far this offseason.
I've personally been wanting it for a while, Bradley Beal or Chris Paul there. I just want those all three of those guys to be on winning teams. They deserve to be on winning teams. And Washington, they need to go full tank mode. That team is just dumpster fire. Like, there's nothing going there, and you're just wasting away a great asset in Bradley Beal. And if he gets hurt, you don't really have that asset. So why not just try to tank or what have you? So with that said, I mean, I truly think they will trade him, but once they realize that Thomas Bryant, Rui, and Isaiah Thomas and Ishmael Smith aren't getting it done with Bradley Beal, I think it'll probably take 10, 15 games. But yeah, there's trades out there, and teams are going to overpay for Bradley Beal in my estimation. I just think you got to do it sooner than later too, because the closer it gets to John Wall coming back, the more they're going to want to wait. So they got to just be smart about this. They got a new GM in Tommy Shepard. I like his personality. I don't necessarily – he's been around the organization a long time. So, yeah, it's one of those deals where, yeah, I'd love Bradley Beal either going to, like, Denver or Miami or, I mean, many teams.
Denver is scary. Denver is a really thought of having Bradley Beal alongside Jokic and Millsap.
Absolutely.
Jamal Murray. That's a dangerous team out there.
Yeah, it just all depends on Washington, how, like, if they think Beal can keep getting much better, because I honestly don't think Beal's going to get a whole lot better. I think he's almost reached his peak, to be honest.
Yeah.
And he's not a guy that's going to bring you single-handedly to the playoffs. I don't know if you think he's going to get a lot better, do you?
No, I think he's right where he is. I think I think efficiency is where we can probably see the biggest, you know.
Right.
If he's around, bigger names and more talent, I think his efficiency numbers go up. He's already a lethal shooter on a team where he doesn't have much help, especially the second half of last season. So
yep.
I think the number-wise, him averaging 25 to 25 points per game, that's probably the peak. But the efficiency can go up. And then rebounding-wise, he's like a six rebounds per game kind of guy with, four or five assists. I think he's
right.
Solid. I agree. I don't think there's much more to come from his game.
Absolutely. No, I think him and Jimmy Butler would be a solid pairing as well. I think their personalities would be just fine, and their games, honestly. It's a team that, depending on what the Heat would have to give up, like, they're close to contending in the East. They really would be. I just believe that those guys, I mean, filled with a couple more shooters around them, as long as they didn't give up like Tyler Hero, I think that would benefit Miami greatly and go a long ways.
Yeah, for sure. Any other teams or guys that come to mind?
That are under the radar. Denver, nobody's talking about Michael Porter Jr. I think him and Bol Bol, they got two guys, like, they took big flyers on back-to-back years, and I love that, being they have so much depth already. And then they go out and get Jeremy Grant, who I really adore. Yeah, sneaky freaking good there. So versatility. They're starting to fill that small forward spot, though, if they do get these guys to develop a little bit. And Michael Porter Jr., I truly believe, I just hope he plays sooner than later. That's just something that hasn't been talked about a lot.
Yeah.
I think Portland could be going I don't think they'll go the wrong way, like, in the regular season, but, like, they got rid of some big depth moves. But as long as Dame and CJ are healthy, they're going to be the same team. Who they brought in is just a weird, weird hodgepodge.
Yeah,
of guys.
I understand wanting to have a center while Nurkic is out, but it being Whiteside as the guy you target is just interesting for me once Nurkic comes back to have Whiteside and Nurkic. Obviously they're never going to play at the same time. You're going to stagger the minutes, but it's just weird to want to have two guys of that size on the team.
Yep, and then to get rid of Chief and Harkless just because you want to revamp and think that's the way you're going to go. But, I think they might have more upside now, I guess, if you're going to unleash Zach Collins fully. And I was the biggest Mario Hezonja guy there is, and last year was my last year of believing in him. I'm out on Hezonja. Drafting a guy like Nasir Little, Anfernee Simons, so – those are going to be the guys that are going to be coming more to the forefront. So they got guys. I just don't think their fit before was just so perfect. And Myers Leonard, they hung on to him for so long and finally gets his chance to shine in the playoffs. And then they just dump him for a guy like Whiteside, who they might only hang for a couple of months. So that was weird to me, what they did. But other than that, I think people are really just jumping the gun on Utah Jazz. I love
really?
Mike
Conley. Well, you think people are jumping the gun on the Jazz?
Yeah, and you know why? It's for your guy, Bojan.
I mean, he got paid.
Yeah, he did. And I think I'm okay with that contract if it was only for 2 or 3 years, but for 4, I know it's nitpicking, but I think that type of stuff matters when you got – guys like Donovan Mitchell, and I don't know. I think they could have, they just got greedy and just threw him the house, and I think they could have got by a little less on that deal, and I think it hurt their depth overall. I mean, having to lose, like, Favors and what have you. But I like the fit. I love their roster and whatnot. Their depth is a little questionable to me, but I just think people are anointing them way too quickly. I'm not 100% sold on Donovan Mitchell yet. I definitely think he's got a lot of potential. I believe in him, but people are anointing him as like this top 20 player, top 25 player, and that hasn't performed in the playoffs yet. And I'm not mad he hasn't, because he's young, and I'm going to give him his pass, but he doesn't get a pass after he's already had his 2 years of passes from me.
Yeah. So, well, no, especially now with all, like, just not to cut you off, all the talent added on this roster, you can make the argument in years past, it was the Donovan Mitchell show because he didn't have a lot of offensive weapons. Yep. That defense is gone. You got Mike Conley, Bojan, Joe Ingles is still there. The talent, the saying you don't have enough offensive weapons around you, that argument is gone for him, for sure.
Yep. And then you add Bojan, who hasn't really performed in the playoffs like he has in the regular season.
I don't know if I fully agree. He was solid against the Cavs. Bojan was pretty good. Last year was a little bit different because Oladipo got hurt, so he boosted it up in the playoffs. He kind of struggled. But the year before, he was pretty good against Cleveland in the finals.
Are you more leaning on the defensive side? Because I was impressed on the defensive side, to be honest. But shooting-wise, why you got the guy? I mean, he shot 31% from 3 last year and only had one playoff performance where he was above 35. It's just his numbers drop drastically, like most players do, though, drop drastically in the playoffs. But for a guy that you're going to be paying like that, who's you're relying on him to keep bombing throughout the year, I don't know. I mean,
there's definitely concern with the playoff number drop. But I think the difference is, you know, this Utah Jazz team does have, I think, they don't, all right. I don't want to say they have better. They have better playmakers than the Pacers have.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
So I think that's what benefits Bogdanovich, is he's playing alongside Conley and Donovan Mitchell. Both those guys can put the ball down and make plays, whereas for the Pacers, it was really just Victor Oladipo. Darren Collison had some nice moments, but the talent around Bogdanovich offensively, I think, is the best talent he's been surrounded. And him being, shooting what? Last year he shot 49 from the field, 42.5 from three. Adding those guys around him, I think, just help his efficiency. I don't think he'll average 18 per game by any means, which all then, right. Like you said, the number that he got is too much. They could have got him for probably $3 million less a year.
Right.
If they had just waited out the market. I don't think that many guys were going to throw Bogdanovich that much money.
No, that's a great point with the playmakers. Yeah, and yeah, Joel Engels in there as well, and he's a great playmaker as well. And Boyan should. I mean, his percentage should be right there, at least during the regular season.
Yeah, and the one thing you like about Bogdanovich defensively is not a good defender, but a guy who tries his ass off. Like he's going to give you 110% on the defensive end, which will fit right in with Utah. But I do agree with you to a degree. Their bench is a little shaky.
Yeah, no, honestly, look at that bench. Outside of Ed Davis, like, nobody's consistent there. I mean, Royce O'Neal, sure, but, like, yeah, that bench is arguably one of the worst benches in the league.
Yeah. Final thoughts, Zach, before we get on out of here.
Man, final thoughts. I appreciate you having me. I'm praying these Wolves stay healthy and just it's Wiggins or bust, unfortunately. I mean, you know, and I only say that, though, from a depth perspective, okay? Like, if we had another, just say, like a Jake Layman type, another one of him off the bench, then I'd be okay with, if Wiggins sucks, bench him if we have to, because I believe in giving more time to let Culver develop and Rocco taking a bigger load. But, yeah, it's tough when your franchise right now lies in the hands of Andrew Wiggins. So hopefully with this new regime in the front office, we can get a little risky and make a big splash, maybe for a D'Angelo Russell or something crazy like that.
It's definitely worrisome. We hope Wiggins gets back on track. Zach, where can the people find you?
Yep. So Zach Noble on Twitter mainly, and it's ZAKNOBLE. And then Four Seasons Podcast by Ball is Life. We're all over there. And it's 4SENS. Me and my partner, Ryan, record once or twice a week. I'm trying to give you content with some of the best players in the league. We're trying to get more and more players constantly. We've had 35, 40-plus current players and 120-plus guests overall.
That's awesome. Definitely check out the Four Seasons Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KWAL Hoops, KWAL Hoops. Be sure to follow the brand at OTG Basketball. Check out otgbasketball.com for the latest and greatest NBA content. And also head to dsgentry.com/off-the-glass. If you use code OTG5, you can get $5 off any merchandise. Until next time, peace out, knuckleheads.